audience for a little bit longer because I have a captive audience here. This is the perfect opportunity to talk to you about the updates to the for the program for the past year or so. Before we get started on that, though, I have a couple of announcements for you. First of all, I am told that those who are planning to join the field trip tomorrow, if you could just check in again with the registration desk to make sure that we have the correct count and names of people who are going, and that will be leaving from here, and it's at 8 o'clock tomorrow. So please check in before you leave for that. Secondly, we also have certificates of participation, and I just got our fantastic little surprise. It's our photo from yesterday, and great photo, great memory souvenir of this conference. And so that will be available for you. So don't leave without getting your certificate and photo. The other thing that I was asked to announce today is that we had a lot of interest in the new working group on mental health, which is fantastic. And the group has already, they've been working hard already, and a Facebook page has been created for the APRU Global Health Programs Working Group on Mental Health. So if you go on Facebook and look for APRU Working Group on Mental Health, you can join that group if you're interested in mental health. So in the next few minutes, I just wanted to give you an update and an overview of our program. A lot of you are new to the conference and to the Global Health Program and to APRU in general. So I thought it might be nice to give you a little bit of introduction and background to the program. Now that you've seen how our conference works, I wanted to tell you about the rest of the activities that we have over so that you can continue to engage in our program over the next year before we see you again next October. So just to remind you about APRU, it's a network, a nonprofit network of 45 leading research universities in the Pacific Rim, including 17 APEC economies, including the world's three largest economies. We are adding new members this year for the first time in many years. And so we're going to get closer to 50 next year. And the secretariat is based in Hong Kong. There's the website, just apru.org. Here's a list of the current members. It does not include the new ones. So the Global Health Program, it was actually launched 10 years ago, and it was formally called the World Initiative, APRU World Initiative Public Health Program. It is one of the five programs of APRU and is the oldest. And the program is housed at my university, University of Southern California, Keck School of Medicine. So in terms of value to APRU members, it brings together an interdisciplinary group to global health. It encourages visibility and raises the profile of APRU through the Global Health Program. It brings attention to university partners for cutting-edge innovative pedagogical methods and increased educational opportunities and capacity building. Takes advantage of our vast array of expertise within APRU. We're developing new leadership, collaborations, and knowledge sharing. and of course, increased opportunities for engagement of students. I think these faces should be familiar to you by now. So I am the program director, and Dr. Heather Whipley is the program chair. This is our advisory group for 2017. You can see Dr. Samet, Jonathan Samet, Heather Whipley, Judith McCool from University of Auckland, Richard Taylor, University of New South Wales, Australia, Masamune Jimba, University of Tokyo, Chengchuan Chan, National Taiwan University, Bangbang Wispriono from University of Indonesia, Christina Schoenlieber from APRU, Juwan Oh, Seoul National University, Leonel Valdivia, University of Chile, Erlinda is from here, and Pinpin Zing is from Fudan. You might be interested in reading a couple of articles that we have published that talk more about our program. The top one there is called Training the Next Generation of Global Health Experts, Experiences and Recommendations from Pacific Rim Universities. That came out of a survey that we did actually before I even came on board 4 years ago, where it looked at the growth of higher education global health focused programs in this region. And then we also had a meeting report published, I think it was last year, about the global health program. So what are our main activities? Well, conference, as you know. So where have the conferences been held? Peking University, we started with 50 participants in 2007. And we went to University of Tokyo, Johns Hopkins University in 2009, Nanjing University, University of Indonesia in 2011, University of Southern California, 2012, Zhejiang University, 2013, National Taiwan University, by then we reached 240 participants for that conference. Osaka University held our conference in 2015. Last year we had it at University of New South Wales. This year, University of the Philippines. And next year, University of Malaya. So, about our conference. This year, we had over 300 participants from 19 economies around the world, and even more astounding, I think, more than 40 disciplines are represented here. So it truly is an interdisciplinary group. You're going to hear a little bit more about the conference next year in a few moments, so I'll move on. Main activities. So one of our main focus is on education. And as you know, we had a student poster contest. So I would encourage you all to participate next year, and if you're faculty, to include your students in this contest. You submit online, you get small cash prizes. We award 3 undergraduate winners and 3 graduate winners. So 2 separate categories for undergraduate and graduate. It's a great way for your students to get a poster presentation at an international conference. And you can see the posters on our website. This year we had 18 entries from 11 different universities, and those are the universities that participated. So we're going to tell you in a few moments during our award ceremony, but you'll see there who won. It's also in the program. So also we have distance education courses that are quite unique, I think, and take advantage of the potential of this network. So what is the model of our courses? So they're graduate level courses that are co-developed and managed by us and member universities. So depending on the course, we have between 3 and 6 partner universities who sign on simultaneously once a week for about 2 hours in the fall semester for 10 weeks. And we have live guest lectures by renowned global health leaders from the WHO, the UN, from government officials, NGO leaders, and even people from the private sector. I'm always astounded at the quality of our lectures. I just contact them and say, they don't even know me, right? They say, hey, I really would love to have you give us an hour talk online. I know it's going to be 11 o'clock at night, your time, but do you mind giving us a talk? And most of the time they say yes. So we've had people like the former director of the Centers for Disease Control in the United States. We have coming up, this week we had the CEO of the Hilton Foundation, someone from UNICEF. Next week, I think we have the former Assistant General of the WHO. These are world-renowned experts who are talking to our class, and we wanted to do it interactively so that our students could actually feel like they're there and are able to have a conversation and ask questions and interact with these leaders in global health. Our students work in international teams. We incorporate small group discussions through breakout rooms. We review case studies, and they have a final team project where they have we form teams of at least one member from each of the participating universities, and they have to work together and navigate what it's like to work in global health with the challenges across time zones and cultures. And it's a really great experience. And we have a couple of some students here now who are participating in one of our courses. So the first course is an example, is a course on global health leadership. This is offered for the third time this year, and it focuses on the relationship of health, foreign policy, and leadership. So we have between 30 and 50 students and several instructors. This year, it's four universities participating and managing the course. So you can see there what the learning objectives are. And the second example is a course that we're offering this year for the second time in global health ethics. And it focuses on cultural perspectives versus international ethical standards, practical application of ethics, and emerging ethical issues and challenges. And again, we have between 40 and 60 students at the same time. And our participating universities last year were those. This year, they're pretty much the same, with the exception of the Instituto Nacional de Salud Pública, which is not participating, but all the others are. We have two of our other instructors. Would you like to say hi, raise your hand, that are participating from Mexico and from the Philippines in that course? And so you can see what the learning objectives are. I learn a lot every single week. I almost want to teach the course just because I learn so much about ethics. So we talk about everything from community-based participatory research to organ transplantation, assisted reproductive technologies, end-of-life care, and many other topics. So we're looking at developing future distance education courses in potentially migration, mental health, or others. As you can imagine, logistically, it's quite complicated, but it's a wonderful opportunity for us to utilize our network in the to its maximum potential. We also are offering a short course on global health. This is going to be an online course that's targeting international high school students. So if you know any high school students that can afford this course, it's a way to help generate funds for our program. We are using some of our same materials that we've developed for other courses. It's a 1 month course in February, and it includes self-paced dynamic exercises, as well as weekly live sessions, and it's taught in English. So it's really focused on high school students who are interested in health or global issues, want careers in health-related fields. And those are the course objectives for that short course. Next, we have the virtual Global Health Case Competition. And the university students from the winning university from last year, Our Lady of Fatima, made us a promo video for that. So if you're interested in trying to engage your university in the competition for next year, you can take a look at this video, which is posted on our website. You already know how that competition works. So last year, for the first year, we had 13 universities enrolled, 10 teams from 13 universities, and challenge related to disaster preparedness in the region. Our finalists came from those three universities, with the winner, Our Lady of Fatima. Those videos are available also on our website. This year, we had 19 universities enrolled, and universities could have multiple teams, so we had 38 teams registered, and as you know, those are our finalists. So please save the date. Tell all of your students. April of next year, we will hold our next competition. We're going to extend it to give a little bit more time, so 4 weeks to submit, and I, of course, can't tell you what the topic is, but we're seeking sponsors. So if you can think of a company, for example, or a foundation that might be interested in sponsoring that to help make sure that the teams can come to the finals, let me know. There are a lot of benefits to participating in this competition, including promoting scholastic and digital creativity, development of new skills, promotes education, partnership, and cooperation, helps foster leadership among our students, and the students create some very innovative solutions to some of the major challenges that we're facing in the region with regard to health. Moving on, research. So we have next year coming out a new case studies book called Global Health Leadership, Case Studies from the Pacific Rim. It is going to be published through Springer Briefs, and it will be available as both an ebook and a printed book. It includes case studies and separate teaching notes, similar to the Harvard Business School case studies model. So it can be used in the classroom to generate and generate discussion, and we facilitate that through the teaching notes. So Judith McCool from Auckland and I are the editors of that. Remind me never to try to work on two books in the same year ever again. We have 12 chapters. And if you remember, if you were here last year, we actually sent a call for abstracts out to all of our members. We reviewed the abstracts, and then we selected a number of chapters from those abstracts. So we wanted specific examples of global health leadership from different sectors, from local government, from national government, from the community, the private sector, et cetera. And just wanted to show you what the table of contents is. So we have plain packaging, tobacco control from Australia, Mexico's leadership in NCDs with the soda tax, corporate wellness programs, eye health in the Pacific Islands, water in Vietnam, blood pressure and stroke from Japan, disaster preparedness, aging in Malaysia, maternal and newborn health from Indonesia. We have a chapter on mental health, a student-led organization out of Australia, a chapter on air pollution, who knows where that's coming from, so I haven't gotten that one in yet, a sexual assault prevention on campuses coming from the United States, national cancer control in Korea from our one of our speakers today, and a chapter on migration from one of our speakers from Monday. Okay, so then another thing is we wanted to look at, in terms of research, look at the role of our universities as employers, not just as academic institutions, but also as employers. And so we have many shared challenges and burdens. Universities are often one of the largest employers in their cities. University of Southern California is actually the largest employer in our city. And we represent our universities, many, many thousands of faculty and staff, as well as students. So universities can really play a key role in advancing health. Last year, our workshop focused in Sydney, Australia on workplace wellness. And so we held a half-day workshop, and it was motivated by the fact that most of the world's population spends about a third of their adult lives at work, making it a key setting for reaching communities with health promotion messages and programs. And so this is an example of the Sydney statement. We thought we were going to have our APRU presidents all endorse this statement. That proved to be quite challenging. So instead we're going to publish it as an APRU Global Health Program statement. That would be all the presidents signing on together is pretty much impossible. So as a follow-up, we're going to be conducting a survey of our member universities regarding basically an inventory and an assessment of their employee health and well-being activities, programs, and policies, so we can make some comparisons and create some recommendations and best practices. So these are some examples of the types of questions that we may want to ask. And Dr. Whipley has worked in workplace wellness, so she has helped with this. Do they have budgets? Do they have a dedicated employee? What are their main health issues among their employees? Do they have leadership with regard to this topic? And then we have an inventory of policies. So if you remember this morning, we had a speaker from the Healthy Women, Healthy Economies Initiative through APEC. Christina and I went to Vietnam and to attend that workshop this year. And I presented this information about how universities can also institute employee health and well-being policies, and how we can focus on gender at universities to support women as well. And I wanted to give you a little bit of the results from our student survey. About 2 years ago, we started an online survey of our students from APRU members and affiliates. And we queried them regarding tobacco knowledge and use, including e-cigarettes. So as you know from the competition, Pacific Rim is home to about a third of the world's smokers, and electronic cigarettes are now widely available in many Pacific Rim countries, representing a new threat to tobacco control among our youth. So I just wanted to, we're still working on writing up the results in a paper, but we had after cleaning the data, we had over 1,900 responses from our students in this survey. And you can see, I broke it down by percentage of total and percentage who are current smokers. So we had about even distribution of female to male, and the majority were in, as expected, between 20 and 24, followed by 25 and to 29. We had all of these countries represented. I know that they're individual countries or economies, but because some of them had small sample sizes, we had to collapse some of the categories. But you can see there, we had quite a large response from affiliates in Bangladesh, Korea, Russia, and others. So you could see where we are in terms of percentage that were current smokers. Bangladesh and Russia came in very, very high, followed by, what would that be, the Americas. And we also broke it down by marital status. As to be expected, the vast majority of participants were single and didn't have any children. We also looked at whether their parent smokes, one or the other smokes. And so about 2/3 said neither parent smoked. And of course, fathers smoking was much more common than mothers smoking. But you can see that there definitely is a trend that when both parents smoke, the student is also much more likely to smoke as well. We also looked at whether cigarette use would predict use of e-cigarettes as well. And so you could see also that the majority had never tried either, but certainly those who had used regular cigarettes had also tried e-cigarettes. This is probably, it's hard to read, but we looked at advertising. Where have they seen ads for e-cigarettes? And did they see advertising around their universities or at their universities? We found a lot were on the internet. Public transportation was another big one. Convenience stores was another big one. Have they ever seen health campaigns that warn about the dangers of using e-cigarettes? And the majority said no, they had not seen health campaigns. Did they support smoke-free campuses? Yes, although there are differences by economy, which will be interesting to explore further. So those are just some examples of what we're doing in terms of the data. In terms of research, we also have the working groups. As you know, we have a number of working groups around key topics of interest. And here you see chairs or co-chairs of our working groups and the working groups that you may have participated in yesterday. Even if you didn't participate, we definitely encourage you to join one of the working groups. I think one of the main benefits of these groups, in addition to being interdisciplinary, is that we include both faculty and students. So it's a way for people to really delve into a topic over the next year and to be able to interact with international peers and students with faculty from universities around the world. An example of a product that just came out from one of our working groups is this paper that was published, a few months ago, on air pollution regulation in the Pacific Rim and perspectives from our program. That was a project that working group came up with. We have a grant application that will be reviewed next month for the U.S. National Institutes of Health training grant to design a bioethics training program for Indonesia, which would then be expanded to the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam. So this is the fourth submission. I don't have the fortitude to do it again. So keep your fingers crossed on that one. And then other activities. So we have a student ambassador program, and we are looking for two students for 2018. So the Global Health Program is run by a very small number of people, and we need help with running the administration of the program, doing things like creating the newsletters, coordinating newsletters, updating our listserv, helping to manage events like the submissions to our case competition, our student poster contest, things like that. It's a wonderful opportunity for students to learn more about global health and to learn more about the network. And of course, you can add these to your CV, great experience. And so if you're interested, please contact me. We have a quarterly newsletter, and now that you've registered, you will be put on the newsletter. The listserv, it comes out 4 times a year. That's what quarterly means, right? And every time we do an education spotlight, a research spotlight, we do a faculty spotlight, a university spotlight, and a student. So we feature one student in each newsletter, one faculty, and so on. I'm always looking for submissions. I'm always writing people, please send me something that we can include in this. We can include if you're somebody has a new book coming out, you've won an award, you're holding a conference, anything like that, that you would like to share with our members. We have over 1,000 people on our listserv, and we would love to, I would love to not have to reach out all the time, love to have more information put into the newsletter. So that, please, you can email me for anything that you would like to add. We have social media. We have both APRU has social media, as well as the Global Health Program has social media, including our own Facebook page. So please, if you aren't on there, I'd love to see posts from the photos that you all took, all those selfies, you could post on our website. And that's all I have in terms of updates. Any questions for me? Questions, comments, or suggestions? Yes. Thank you, Richard. I appreciate that. All right. Well, if you feel shy about giving comments now, or you think of something later, you all have my email. Feel free to email me and share your feedback or comments or suggestions. Okay, let's move on then. Now, we are going to present the awards for our student poster contest. So, I'm not sure if the students are here, but let's see. Is a student from national, so graduate first. First place award went to Justin Trope. He is not here. He's doing a master's in the UK. Second place award is Fanju Xiao from National Taiwan University. Our third place award went to Nurul Siafika from University of Malaya. Okay, so now moving on to our undergraduates. Okay, our winners, first place winners of our undergraduate student poster contest come from Seoul National University. First, this is a whole team effort here, so Taeyoon Kim. And Chun-sak Ko. Jin Yang Song. Sung Hyun Kim. Winners, first place winners of our undergraduate student posters. Second place, Serge John Paul Dashmi. Also a team effort, students coming from the University of California, Los Angeles. Come on up. Okay, Haven Nisley. Ashton Parikh. And Audrey Nguyen. Round of applause for our student poster contest winners. Okay. Now for our the winners. Our second annual, so 2017 Global Health Virtual Case Competition. So I'm going to announce the winning team. The winning team, which receives a prize of $500, comes from the University of Indonesia. Thank you. Finalist team, please come up, University of Sydney. Great job. Kamisat University. Congratulations. Very nice job. Thank you to everyone for your help in judging those three excellent videos. So next item on our agenda, I would like to invite Sanjay Ramal to come up from the University of Malaya. He is the head of the Department of Social and Preventive Medicine at the Faculty of Medicine and Public Health.
So thank you, Melissa. So my name is Sanjay. I head the Public Health Department in University of Malaya, and we are very thankful that APRU and APRU Global Health Program has given us the privilege of organizing next year's conference. The University of Philippines has done a very great job this year, and we hope we can continue the tradition of this conference. So next year's theme will be on planetary health, right? And Melissa and ourselves, we are in the midst of coming up with a scientific program, but the dates are kind of fixed. So we have decided to have it from October 28th, right? We will start on October 28th with a pre-conference workshop, and then we'll move on to October 29th and 30th with a main conference. Following the main conference, we're in the midst of trying to organize a post-conference workshop, and we're looking into the logistics, and most likely we'll try to have it in Borneo, in Sarawak, right? So we'll try to do an outbreak simulation in Sarawak, but that's still being planned. And when the scientific program gets more formalized, we will circulate it to all of you. Now, so the first thing I can do is introduce you to Malaysia, right? So can we have video one and video two? Can we have the music?
judge no more. It's here, finding joy, endless cheer.
Okay, you can imagine the music playing in the background, right? It's very nice, enchanting, soothing music. And here we have some part of our indigenous groups, where this is a culture from Borneo. Are we getting the music up? I could sing, but I'm a very bad singer. Right? Right. So these are just different images from Malaysia, showing you the culture. So Malaysia is a multi-ethnic country, right? We have cultures from the Malay population.
Keep your favorite memory.
The tagline.
Search no more, it's here, fun and joy, endless cheer. The memory so dear, after years still so clear. Journey into this and more. Come on over and explore different world. Surely say nothing more one can ask for. Just with your senses, theory in the no pretenses. Every step is something new, perfect to refresh you. Live your favorite memory, danger, land of memory. Keep your favorite memory, danger, land of memory.
So this is in keeping with the sustainability theme, right? And after introducing it to Malaysia, my next video, video number three, will introduce you to the university.
From the King Edward VII College of Medicine in 1905 to the merger of Raffles College in 1949, the University of Malaya has become the leader in the advancement of education since 1962. University of Malaya was listed among the top 200 universities in the QS World University Rankings and among the top 50 in the QS Asian University Rankings. For decades, the University of Malaya has produced countless illustrious scholars, philosophers, entrepreneurs, and national leaders. A visionary strategy to promote quality research and innovation has opened a world of opportunities for students to expand their knowledge. From a prominent teaching hospital in Malaysia to the largest collection of water vessels in Southeast Asia. From rare plants to the collection of books and monographs on various subjects. The University of Malaya also continuously generates knowledge in ocean and terrestrial research through collaborations between researchers from various fields. The Regional Global Atmospheric Watch Center, GAW, in Batok, London, a collaboration with the University of Cambridge and University of East Anglia, serves as a gateway to discoveries in the South China Sea. The University of Malaya is progressively paving the way for a sustainable agriculture and plant production system by using state-of-the-art technology to generate and disseminate scientific ideas. The University of Malaya Medical Center, UMMC, is the first teaching hospital and among the biggest in Malaysia. While the Clinical Investigation Center, CIC, University of Malaya Medical Center, is the first in the Asia-Pacific region and fifth in the world. The Biological Control Agents Research Facility, a biosafety level 1 and 2 laboratory, is the first in Malaysia. The high-tech Shimadzu UMMC Center for Xenobiotic Studies, SUCCESS, conducts research, training, and teaching in toxicology and drug analysis. The National Orthopedic Center of Excellence for Research and Learning, NOSORL, is one of the research laboratories which has been accredited to conduct research and tests in the field of orthopedic surgery. The Breast Cancer Research at the University of Malaya Medical Center is the leader in breast cancer research in Asia. The Gastrointestinal Endoscopy Unit at the University of Malaya Medical Center is the only one of 4 centers in Asia and one of 16 in the world. The Sports Medicine Unit at the University of Malaya Medical Center is an advanced center in Malaysia focusing on sports medicine. The University of Malaya Dental Program is the first in Malaysia with comprehensive facilities. Among the biggest contributions of this program is the successful facial reconstructive surgery procedure using stretching technique technology, the first case in Malaysia which was performed at the University of Malaya Medical Center. The Center for Quranic Research, CQR, the first in Malaysia, promotes and enhances awareness on the significance and holiness of the Quran and the knowledge it contains. The U.S. Energy Dedicated Advanced Center, UNPDEC, is a pioneer of research in renewable energy innovation locally, meeting international standards. The Photonics Research Center is the only comprehensive planar light wave circuit fabrication facility in Malaysia and Southeast Asia. The University of Malaya's Center for Innovation and Commercialization, UMCIC, is responsible for the commercialization of the university's innovative products. University of Malaya is an eco-friendly campus surrounded by a tropical rainforest in the heart of Kuala Lumpur. The Rimba Ilmu, or Forest of and fauna. The University of Malaya also continuously generates knowledge in research on humanities and social sciences and other similar issues. The University of Malaya Art Gallery houses the only collection of M.F. Hussein's paintings in Malaysia. The strategic partnerships between the University of Malaya and reputable universities abroad in research, development, and the commercialization of research has created a conducive research culture and a superior knowledge center, producing individuals who are competent, innovative, and ethical. The University of Malaya is also recognized for its commitment to higher education founded on research and innovation, ethics, and professionalism, and awarded an autonomy status by the Ministry of Higher Education in January 2012. The University of Malaya has become an icon in various fields since its establishment. Indeed, University of Malaya has undergone many transformations since its inception more than 100 years ago. With the commitment and faith of the University of Malaya in its vision, mission, and core values, the university will continue to play a major role in providing excellence in higher education and building a progressive society to place the university in a prestigious position in the international arena.
Thank you. So we are done with the videos. I think that's enough of videos, Eddie. And finally, I'd like to thank again APRU for giving us the opportunity, and I thank the organizers for this conference to help us introduce Malaysia and help us introduce University of Malaya to all of you. Hope to see you next year. Thank you.
Fantastic. I hope we will see all of you there. So now to close this, I would like to invite Christina Schoenlieber to come up.
Right. Hello. On behalf of APRU, the Association of Pacific Rim Universities, well, you've met Chris Tremaine yesterday morning. I would, first of all, I'd like to thank everybody who traveled and came to Manila for the last 2-3 days, including workshop number zero. As Chris explained yesterday, APRU is here to bring together academic experts through our hubs, such as the Global Health Hub, which is one of our key hubs, in addition to 4 or 5 others, to get academic experts, practitioners, policymakers to engage with each other and for us to address key issues in the Asia Pacific. And this conference has been a fantastic example of how this can be done to build a network. You all came, you spoke, you engaged, participated in the workshops. So that's fantastic, and I'm so pleased that this has worked so well. I just would like to say thank you very much again to Melissa for pulling this all together, for USC, University of Southern California, for Heather, for driving this hub forward for APRU, for the Asia-Pacific region. I'd like to thank you, University of the Philippines, for hosting this, for stepping forward and putting so much effort into this. It takes a whole year to set this all up and develop it. So I would like to say thank you. Thank you for coming, and I hope we will see most of you, all of you, and more next year in Malaysia.
And now I would like to invite Heather Whipfley to come up and for our closing.
Thank you. Well, we made it. What a packed 3 days we've had. It does feel in some ways like it's been a week since we last saw Chris. But in fact, it was just yesterday. And we've had just a wonderful experience. I have to say, it's been mentioned already, but this has been the largest, and I would argue the highest quality meeting that we have yet had for APRU. Congratulations. We've had fabulous talks, and even more importantly, we've had really engaging, important discussions together about how we're going to take our work forward. I'm very excited about what's coming in this network. So I also want to say thank you to many people. I would love if the organizing committee from the University of the Philippines could come up here and let us all thank them one more time. Can anybody and everybody involved at the University of the Philippines please come forward? This has been a very well orchestrated event. Everything from the food to the music between every speaker to all of the materials that we've had, it's been absolutely flawless. So thank you so much. Of course, they're all working too hard to although they're not here, I also want to thank the team at the University of Southern California Institute for Global Health. There's a whole team back behind us, supporting us in LA. So thank you to specifically Larissa, who handles a lot of the communication and the material. I want to thank once again all of the supporters and the funders of the event, including APRU, the National Cancer Institute in the United States, the University of Southern California, and the University of California, Davis. Without that financial investment, none of this would be possible. I want to thank the other advisory group members for supporting the organization throughout the entire year. So let's give the advisory group a big hand. And finally, I think we all know who needs to have one more huge round of applause for all of her work and all of her commitment day in and day out. So Melissa, please come up and let's give her a good one. Okay, so that's it. I just want to say once again, I hope that I'll see some of you tomorrow on our cultural adventure day. I'm really excited to get out of the hotel, and I'm sure you are too. And more importantly, I'm sure we'll be in touch, but if not before, then I will see you all next year in Malaysia. I look forward to it. Thank you. It might seem crazy what I'm about to